Main speaker for this evening, Todd L. from Laguna Hills.
Hello, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Todd. It's by God's grace, Alcoholics Anonymous, and strong sponsorship that I've been clean and sober since April 29th, 1983, and for that I'm forever grateful. I want to thank Larry for inviting me to come share with you guys. Thank Michelle for doing 10 minutes and riding with me. For you guys for coming with me, and your lovely women that came with you. And I am honored to be here. If you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that AA works and it works good. I just celebrated 33 years of sobriety in my home group, the Monday Night Bellflower Big Book group, which you heard earlier. It's about 400 people now come to that meeting every Monday night, and a lot of people want commitments there. And what we do to get them involved is by asking them to be in the greeting line. So we have like 75 people that actually line up and greet everybody. And it's a good way for them to, you know, meet people and ask for the group members to meet them as well. And I love my home group. It's a meeting I stood up as a newcomer. That's where I found a sponsor. That's where I've been actively involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't miss that meeting if I physically can't. That's my AA address, if you're ever wanting to know where I live. But I'm here to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I grew up in the South Bay area, Torrance, Redondo Beach. My parents are still happily married. I have two younger sisters, 4 and 5 years younger than me. They're snitches. And did not trust them one bit. I don't know if it's the age gap or what, but I was their big brother, but I didn't trust him. And, I didn't become an alcoholic because of where I lived or my family or anything like that. I became an alcoholic because I like to drink. I like to get drunk. And it just says it in the doctor's opinion, you know, men and women essentially drink for the effect produced by alcohol. And that was me. I drank to get drunk, and once that phenomenal craving kicked in, once I having that first drink, I couldn't tell you what was going to happen. My first party was, people were twice my age. I got, you know, you're trying to figure out how old I am. I'll be 50 this year. 49 is the actual number, I should say, but I got sober young, and I've been fortunate that I got a sponsor and an active home group where it's kept me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not the only young guy to ever get sober. There's a bunch of us that, you know, have double-digit sobriety now. But, you know, I've stayed committed. You know, I've stayed committed. And my life has gotten, it's blossomed. And not that I'm a delicate flower, but it's my life is full. My life is full. That's what I'm trying to share. But growing up, my first party was with a group of guys that were twice my age, and they just said, "Hey, Todd, if you want something to drink, just go over there and get in line." And I did. I was happy to get in line, and you know, when it came my turn, this guy says, "All right, you're gonna have to hold your breath." I didn't know what he meant, but he grabbed this funnel with a tube on the end of it, and my first drink was a result of beer bonging. And you drink a few of those, you'll start feeling the effects, and before I knew it, I was happily drunk, and I ended up passing out in the garage, and which was going to be a regular residency for me as I got older, other people's garages. But when I came to the next morning, I found out how to get rid of that hangover by taking a morning drink. And it was on. I loved everything that alcohol did for me. I didn't care what they said I did. I denied it. And, I couldn't wait to get drunk again. I could not wait to get drunk again. I didn't instantly turn into an alcoholic. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was at that age, you know. But I just know I knew what alcohol could do for me, and I just couldn't wait to get, you know, the drink again. It wasn't. I was never a social butterfly or outgoing person. I was more of a triple negative. But I would laugh if you tripped and fall kind of guy, you know. And you know, I'd smile. That was good, you know. You know, watching you eat, you know. Whatever. I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't like going to rush over and help you up. You know, I figure if you fell down, you can get yourself up. And I was one of those kind of guys, a dick. But as I got older, alcohol became part of my life. I found out what a pair of bolt cutters could do, to the point where I became a professional thief because it was flexible hours, work at your own pace. And I got to wear black at night, which I loved. And I never had a boss over me. And so that's how I was supporting myself. I stole a lot of things that I had to make amends for in early sobriety. But, I don't know if I crossed over an invisible line, but when I got into high school, I lost all interest of learning. Matter of fact, the first day of school, they gave me all these books, and I found the locker, and I threw them in there, and I tore up the combination, and I just figured I'm not going to last here. And because where I grew up, the Strand, Hermosa Beach, was right over the hill, and I had everything I wanted right there at the beach. And, and I didn't specialize, but I drank a lot, and and got loaded, and when it came time to go back to school, I couldn't do it, I tried blending in with the high school students and go to the Friday night football game and go find out where the parties were afterwards, but I wasn't a social guy. But if it was a kegger party, you'd find me, I'm the guy holding the pump, that way I could get all I could drink, especially if I paid a buck to get in. And then kegger parties were real popular in my where I grew up. And I remember I'm going to tell you my story. My family went on vacation. I took my sisters with them. I had a part-time job as a busboy at Old Town Mall. And I told my family, you got nothing to worry about. I'll take care of the family dog. This was before cell phones, so if they called and checked in, it was easy to miss their call. And I said, you got nothing to worry about. And once they took off, 4 hours go by, I'm sitting on a couch and a beer commercial comes on. I'm sitting on the couch watching TV and I see this commercial, and what I remember, my perception of it was, is a couple people having a barbecue, and the theme was like steak and lowbrow, what a great combination, four people having a great gathering. And I'm sitting on that couch thinking, I got the house to myself, I could have a small little barbecue. And I had two friends. I called them over, and they were already coming over because the house, was unsupervised. And we pitched in. We got a keg. We put the keg in the garage. And before I knew it, people were knocking on my door. And people I didn't even know, and I just let them right in. And it was a one-story house, and before I knew it, there was, 300, 350 people in the house. And we're just packed wall to wall. And the only thing I did with the family dog, I put them in my parents' room, protect their valuables, and proceeded to get drunk. And the house got destroyed, broken glass, burnt furniture, the normal stuff. And I go out the next morning, I'm looking for stale beer just to get rid of that hangover, go out in the front yard, and neighbors are all pissed off with their push brooms, getting all the beer bottles out of the gutter. And, I'm thinking, I know we had a great time. I'm hungover, I'm drunk, and from drinking all night, and I just, you know what I said? Let's do it again. I still got the house. I'll put a three. I had these keen alcoholic ideas on how to make money, but never made a dime. But my idea was, the next night we'll put a 350-pound guy at the door as a bouncer and charge people to come in to make up for the damages that occurred the first night. And sure enough, twice as many people showed up the second night, and I had a line going into the house, and it was insane. I didn't have no respect for the neighbors or anything like that. Of course, they're knocking on the door complaining, too many people, turn the sound down, but I didn't care. The house got so full, I didn't know what to do, and I got to let that dog out of that bedroom. That's all I could think about, and I didn't really have anybody that I really knew personally, but I had the type of dog that wouldn't bark, but he bit pretty good. And, I didn't know what to do, so I just start telling people, you need to hide. I'm letting them out. And so I start stuffing people in bedrooms, the bathrooms, the shower. I'm shutting doors behind, every time I went, I'm trying to clear a pathway down the hall through the kitchen to the backyard. There's like 75 people just in the garage alone, because that's where the keg was. So I shut that door. Don't come out. I'm letting the dog out. He's going to the backyard. Everything should be cool. I let that dog out, and sure enough, from one of the bedrooms, I think it was my sister's bedroom, I heard these people cheering this guy on, like, go for it. You can make it. you know, like, or he got pushed out. I don't know, but he started running, and he ran. He went down the hallway, ran to the kitchen, and the dog kind of locked eyes on him, and just the guy knew he was in trouble. And you know, it's like you ever gone into a room where you shouldn't be there. That's the look that guy had. And my dog got him, lockjawed him right between the legs. I don't know if you've ever heard a grown man scream, but it's not like a scared scream. It's kind of like a scream where you never forget that sound. And he brought him to the ground. And I'm drunk. I can't get the dog off the guy. If I pull on him, it's like pulling on a tug rope. It's not good. And I'm trying my best to help this guy. He's screaming with his life on the line. And there's blood everywhere, and it was a bad scene. And the only thing I could think about, all right, the nozzle, the hose in the backyard, grab that, put the nozzle in his mouth. It gave him a little gap where I could, squeeze the guy out. And then the dog went to the backyard, and this guy's in a fetal position on the ground in the kitchen. And this is what alcohol does to me. I turn into like the Iceman. I just, show no emotion. I'm dead serious. I looked at the guy straight to his face, and I said, "Look, man, you got to go." this guy needed medical attention, but he wasn't going to get it from me. And I said, "Look, man, this is my house. I don't know who you are, but, you're bringing people down, That's the way I treated that guy. And whoever brought him, took him to the hospital. And when you have that severe of a dog bite, animal control comes out the next day and they put a sign on your gate and they quarantine the animal. And it just became, not only was the house destroyed when my family came back, they had a lawsuit as a result of that dog bite, severe dog bite. That's when I started not caring, man. I was like, man, I thought I had a great time, and it just went sour. And it didn't stop me from drinking. I drank more, now I became a high school dropout. And I ended up like people were just like me. We ended up in this high school called Sherry High. And we all had long hair, concert T-shirts, Holy Levi's, and Vans tennis shoes. And we used to say, "What's up?" But I would add, "What's up, dude?" To it. And then after a while, we just gave each other head nods like that. And that's how we were communicating with each other. The only education I got out of that high school was how to use a triple beam scale. And once I learned that and had that down, I was off on my, adventures. And, I did fly straight, to get a permit, a driver's permit. And then when I turned 16, I was able to get my driver's license. And when I got my driver's license, my drinking enhanced fully. Because now I can go through any drive-through dairy. They never carded me. If you got money, a dairy just gave you, they'll give you whatever you want to drink. And, it was never a problem. I never paid for gas. I learned how to siphon it. And, that's tools of the trade, man. Cause I had the hose, the gas can, and a pair of bolt cutters behind my seat. And I was able to get a car for my uncle. It was a 70 El Camino Chevrolet. Only year they made that body style, classic muscle car, 454 dual carb. It was great for the quarter mile racing when we used to go to the Torrance Airport. And I was living a dream. I was, I had it going on. I mean, as I thought, but the problem is I drink and drive. It was no time before I start hitting parked cars, and I'm not one of those guys going to leave a note on your windshield saying, "Call me," you already know I'm not that type of guy. Right. And, and I usually got the crowbar out of the back seat and bend the right front fender back and take off. And now I'm driving this car with no right front fender, no hood, because, they didn't look right. And the cops can pull you over any time when you're driving like that, but I didn't care. I'm going, man. I'm going. And as long as that motor was running clean, I was flying. And the problem is I got in two major accidents in 1 week. The first one was I went through an intersection, hit a VW bug, and my car's solid, and that VW just half the car disappeared, and it became a hit and run because I wouldn't stick around. I'm under the influence. I'm out of here, and I knew I can't stick around. And then 3 days later, on a rainy day, I hit a white pickup truck, and I didn't stick around for that. What happened is the car finally died of alcoholism, just wouldn't run anymore. I had to park it in my parents' driveway. I was a great starter but piss poor finisher. I tried dropping the motor, disconnecting the tranny, and that's as far as I got. Because I blew a connecting rod and the motor needed to be, swapped out. But that's it, just sat there on blocks. But that doesn't slow a guy like me down. I'll find other methods of getting around. And I found out, there's plenty of skateboards and bicycles to steal. I'm living like there's no tomorrow, I couldn't hold a job. My life depended on it. I wasn't eating three meals a day out there. I got down to 120 pounds. My eyes were sunken in. I remember looking in the mirror. And I'm just starting to physically get sick from drinking. I'm not eating three meals a day. And for some reason, I went to a 7-Eleven, and those microwave burritos look really good. But I don't have any money. And I'm thinking, well, I'll just stick it in the microwave. The guy won't hear the bell ring. No big deal. I put the burrito in the microwave. The bell rings. I grab it. I stick it down my pants. You do that once in your life. That's it, man. You know where I'm going with this, right? But all I can think about is I got to get by the guy behind the counter. I'm pretty sure I'm loaded because I'm not feeling it right away. But when I get up to the counter, man, my eyes are getting teary-eyed. The guy was looking at me like this in front of those big, giant, round mirrors I never noticed. He's like, dude, what's wrong with you? And that was demoralizing because now it's burning a hole in my leg. And I know it, man. You know when you got a burn mark. And I had to reach down my pants and give it back to him. When you're a professional thief, that's called a blow it. And when I, that was demoralizing for me. I to have to give something back that you stole. Then I got to run. Because the cops are on their way, and I'm not a fast runner, and it's just consequences, man. I was living like there's no tomorrow, and I always pride myself on being a good thief, and when that happened, I was losing my cool, and I was losing any dignity that I had. Now I'm sleeping in the park, other people's garages, passing. My parents didn't know where I was. Only when the holidays came around was I coming home, see what I can get. Not what I can bring. I'm the guy that ruins Thanksgiving. I'm the guy that ruins Christmas because I'm a taker. I'm just a street kid, punk taker, had no respect for cops, especially canine. I know what it's like to need medical attention. I've had stitches all over my body. And all I can tell you, if the canine cops let loose, you freeze, man. You don't run. Me not being a fast runner did not help, but I know what it's like to need medical attention from a dog bite, and it's not fun, and so that's how I'm living, man. I just don't have respect from any, no authority whatsoever, my dad got sober a year before I did, and he was a truck driver. He was on the road a lot, so I had a lot of I was unsupervised a lot. And my mom could not control me. There was no way. Nothing personal. I wasn't a mama's boy, and I just did what I wanted. I lived like there was no tomorrow, and my life just kept getting worse and worse. It's not like you wake up one day and say, oh, boy, let's go to AA. I did not want to be here. I thought, I was trying to share the story. My father got sober a year before I did, and I thought it was great for him, but I didn't know if it would work for me. I really didn't. At 16 years old, I was pretty much unteachable. I don't know where that willingness came from. It's not like, I had no hope. That's what I had. I had no hope for my life, and I didn't know what, you know, the only thing I knew was how to break into my sister's piggy bank, get $1.29, so I could get a quarter miller to start my day. You know, that's how I had to start my day, by drinking. And when there's no hope, my life just had nothing to shoot for. And I asked for help. My father was home, and he had insurance, and he says he loved me enough where he knew he couldn't help me. You know what I mean? And I wasn't close to my father, but I had respect for him. I knew he was a hard worker, and he took me to Doctor's Hospital Lakewood, which wasn't near where I lived, and dropped me off. And he was afraid I'd get home before he did. And because I had resources, and, you know, I didn't know if I was going to get sober. I really didn't. What happened is they put me in that room with funny PJs. And on the third day, they gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't reading books that big. It wasn't like I was going to cuddle up next to it and read it. And I wasn't a book reader. I was afraid you might understand or know that I was a high school dropout I didn't think I'd be smart enough to read some of the words. And when you got that street mentality, you don't want to show other people your weaknesses. And that's the way I treated it. And people didn't care. My first meeting was in a place called Thursdays. It's in Sunset Beach. It's an old bar converted into a meeting hall. The AA community just recently bought it. So it could be, you know, always there. But that was the first place I went and stood up as a newcomer. I said, I'm Todd, I'm an alcoholic. And people didn't care how old I was, where I'd been, what I did. They were just glad to see me. And I was 16 years old. And I didn't have a close relationship with my family. The education part didn't come till I was 5 years sober, where I took the GED. But my first 30 days, I can tell you, my first meeting, I could see people had something that I didn't have, and that was sobriety. They were happy. They were hugging each other. And I wasn't hugging nobody. And I was afraid of the touching game, to tell you the truth. I didn't know what unconditional love was. But I saw something there that made me, you know, they were welcoming me, and I was always being asked to leave. So that was the part that I didn't understand. They didn't want nothing from me, but they were glad I was there. And then the next night, I went to the Monday Night Bellflower Big Book Group, and a guy named Big Todd, and there was another guy bigger than him. His name was Classic Todd. Big Todd was 300 pounds, and Classic Todd was 350 pounds. And these guys were, you know, they're over 6 feet, and me being, you know, only 120 pounds, and they had to throw out a nickname. You know what I became? I became Little Todd. I was thinking, man, when I was drinking, I never ran into anybody with the same name. And I come to my second meeting of AA, and there's three of us with the same name. But unfortunately, I'm the only Todd now, 100 pounds heavier. But, that'll change. But anyhow, these guys loved me, man. They took me. They said, if you want to stay sober, just come with us. And Big Todd ended up being my sponsor. And these guys were active. They were always doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they didn't care how old I was. They said, get in the car, man. And if it meant riding on the hump, I rode on the hump. And we went all over the place, you know. I've been fortunate that I got involved with an active men's stag group early on in sobriety. And we traveled the country doing things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went to men's stag retreats and, you know, did all, you know, potlucks, campouts, you name it. You know, we were together all the time. You know, they said if you drink and use every day, you need to switch your obsession from drugs and alcohol to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't have no social events on my calendar, so it was pretty easy for me to go to a meeting every night. And they told me I need to get a job, be self-supporting. They said, if you're not going back to school, you need to get a job. And they were real adamant about that, you know. And me having a young, busy mind, I didn't know what I was going to do for work. And I finally got a job working for a repossession company. And, you know, they said I had some skills they could still use. And as long as my driver's license didn't have any marks against it, I was golden. And then people in AA would frown on that, like, man, you're still a thief, you know. But you told me to get a job, so I got a job. And the job was, to me, the best job in the world, because I'd go to a meeting every night, and then I couldn't wait to go to work. And for alcoholics, man, it's like, you can only have one obsession, that's AA. But I was like, I couldn't wait to go to work. Because I know there's some car thieves out here. I can look at you. You'll understand this feeling. I'm one of those guys that loves to drive your car when you don't know it. Because everything in your car is going to be mine. We're going to go through it later. And it just wasn't just one car. It's like if there's a Corvette on the list, oh, couldn't wait to have that car. So I did that for a year and a half. People in AA did not like that because they've had their cars repossessed. And if you had a potluck over your house, they're like, watch that guy, he's a thief. You know, I couldn't go to the bathroom unsupervised. But if you locked your keys in your car after the meet, where's Todd? We need him. I'd get a big hug, man. Oh, we love you. Oh, man, you saved me so much money. And they were happy, because I had tools to break into anything. But I finally surrendered that job, not by sponsor direction, even though he frowned on it. I surrendered it because a police officer caught me on a scene. And he pulled up on me and with the, light flashing and got out and he says, freeze. When a cop says freeze, he wants to see your hands. And the car I was in was a Mustang, a stick. I'm trying to put it in neutral, grab the emergency brake. Those kind of hand gestures made it look like I was going for a weapon. And it forced the officer to pull his revolver and point it right at my head. And that's when I knew it was unhealthy for my sobriety. And that's when I called my sponsor up at 3 in the morning. I said, look, I'll do whatever you say. And he understood, man. He was one of those guys that answered the phone in the middle of the night. And I ended up getting a job at a forklift rental place as a forklift mechanic. And it seemed like the longer I stayed sober, the better my jobs would get, the better my cars. Cause I had a car that leaked a quart of oil a day when I got sober. And I wasn't allowed to park in anyone's driveway, and not even for fun, They saw me coming a mile away with the smoke, but the longer I stayed sober, the better my car got, the better my living conditions. I got an apartment with some sober guys. We were self-supporting. It wasn't a sober living environment. It was a couple of guys that had to go to work and pay their rent, and nothing against your sober environment, houses or whatever you're in. It's not a place you're going to retire at, I hope. And I got in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Once I start working those steps, my sponsor says, look, I've given you everything I can give you. It's time to give it away. And I knew what he was trying to say, but he was giving me that tough love. Like, look, I don't want to see it till you got a newcomer in your life. And our Monday night meeting has plenty of newcomers. And so, all right, I'll show you. I'll find one. And at the break, I went up to three guys in the back of the room. They were all new. And I just said, let's cut out the small talk. Which one of you guys want to stay sober? And one guy out of three raised his hand. And I looked at him. He had piercing everywhere, pale white, which I'm cool about. No big deal about that. Different color hair. He didn't have no shoes on, just shorts. And I was cool with all that. What bothered me was he kept doing this twitching, kept doing this. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? And he goes, I need a sponsor. And I go, well, you're not what I'm looking for. I didn't even know what I was looking for, but the twitching kind of threw me off. But I thought, you know what, I need credit. Come with me. And my sponsor wouldn't talk to me. He said, good for you, man. Take him home. And what happened is I ended up sponsoring this guy. I ended up taking him to meetings before the meeting. And after the meeting, I'd take him home because I had a car. It didn't matter about our appearances. It was like one alcoholic sharing to another. That's when I started caring for another human being. You got to remember, I wasn't real good on emotions or hugging people or any of that stuff. And this guy taught me how to hug and how to care. And when I heard his fifth step, it changed everything about me, because we did the same things. And I had the same I started having compassion. I wasn't good at sponsoring right away. This guy being pale white, we had this camp out in Barstow. I just thought I'd take him out there and watch him burn, And, you know, I didn't give him no bullfrog, nothing. And, you know, he ended up trying to leave in the middle of the night, had to come back, found out he was in the desert. You know, so I, you know, I had to, but it was the old timers that pulled me off the side. Said, look, man, show this guy how to work the steps. And I've always had respect for people with more time than me. And if I haven't, you know, I apologize, but I always felt like I've always had to do what you've done to pave the way. And irregardless, you know, if you've stayed here any length of time, you've done some work. And, you know, and so I owe my gratitude to the people who have gone before me. And the old timers, you know, they taught me everything I know today, you know, and I've had some great teachers that have passed on and moved on. And my sponsor now is coming up on 55 years sobriety, and I pick him up every Monday night like clockwork. You know, I call him and ask him, can I pick you up? That's, you know, that's the kind of guy I am. I'm a product of strong sponsorship. And ever since that time, I've been sponsoring guys, you know, since I was 2 years sober, you know, and, you know, so there's a lot of people who have come and gone, but I have some great relationships with people all around the country as a result of sponsorship. And so if you don't have one, I strongly suggest you get one, you know. And if not, I'll give you my number, you know. It's like you got to have that connection here. And, you know, because it changed everything about my life. I was able to meet my current wife. We were young. She was sponsoring women. I was sponsoring guys. And we had that AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus. It's in the 12 and 12 if you want to read it. And, you know, it could be happening here tonight. I don't know. And, you know, but it's in the, you know, it's written about us, and, not just us personally, but you too. And, you know, and, you know, we got married, had a son, and, you know, she just shared with you that our son's 25, be 26 this year, and he's been in and out of AA and into jail. And, he lives with us now. We were divorced for 18 years. Here in Alcoholics Anonymous. None of us got custody of our home group. You know, and we'd actually go to the same meeting on Monday night and being divorced. And because we had to raise our son. You know, you want to talk about principles before personalities. You know, a lot of people can mimic that, but they can't walk it. And, you know, I've had to walk it, you know, and because other people's sobriety was on the line. You know, and that's it. One thing for sure. I always wanted my ex-wife to stay sober. And even though her story didn't work out that way, our friendship of being parents and co-parenting survived. You know, in other words, you know, I was still trying to do the right thing. And it wasn't easy. We were divorced for 18 years. She had an AA party just, you know, when she was 15 years sober. And her sponsor had me share and her best friend share at her party. Not knowing anything that was going to happen or anything, I was like more than happy to share at her party that, you know, because we've known each other for 30 years and raised a son. Her mom was in the audience. Her mom and her older brother, her oldest brother that I'm close to today. And so when I got up there, I said, I love her. I'm glad she's sober. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, unconditional love, but at the same time, it was true feelings. That I truly did love my ex-wife, and her mom heard that, you know. And I don't, you know, being a son-in-law, I never felt that. I was never that close to her mom, but her mom saw something changed in me, where it encouraged her daughter, like maybe you guys should go out together, or you know, it opened up a door as a result of her AA party, and we shortly after that started dating, and for us to work. By this time, she had her house. I had a house in Lakewood. She had a house in Orange County. We ended up selling both our homes and buying a house together and started off fresh. And it's been almost 3 years now. And our son still lives with us. Rat bastard's got everything. And he's probably wearing my socks right now. And he's not going to move out. She won't allow it. And, you know, I'm happy. You know, I'm trying to share with you that it's been a bumpy road. Just because we got back together doesn't mean everything was perfect, but we've worked through it. And, our lives have come together where we got a bond. You know, I was with her when her mom passed away, shortly afterwards, which really brought us together. And all my amends with her family were taken care of. I'm close to my family, too. I don't want to suggest I'm not. I just recently went on a bike trip with my dad, who's over 70, where I met him in Las Vegas on a motorcycle trip. So it was kind of a neat experience to be able to ride with your old man, at least for me. I have a really great life. I worked in aerospace, in construction, and I've had ups and downs, but I have a really great life. We have an open home, an AA home, where people can come and go in our house. And just last week, I lost a rescue dog that was my best friend. I rescued a boxer that was 85 pounds, and just last Saturday, he passed away while he was eating dinner. And it was really, we didn't see it coming. And it was heartbreaking and tragic, and our son and her and I were all there to take him to the vet and get the ashes cremated and stuff. So, it was, I have feelings today. I really opened up. I think that experience brought us all closer together. And, I really got a good life, and it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous and that I'm willing to keep giving it away and let people share this with us. So if you're new, I hope you can stay. I hope you can find what I've found here. It works. It really does. Thanks for having me.
Wow.